Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
All right. Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming to the Getting Your Fiction Published workshop. Feel free to sit wherever you want, but my voice is certainly going, so don't be afraid to come forward if that's a thing that you enjoy, because I'm going to be squeaking like I'm going through puberty all through this. We are two of the most fiction-oriented people at Paizo. I'm James L. Sutter. I'm the creative director on Starfinder, but I also have been the head of the Pathfinder Tales fiction line since inception. I also, co-creator of Pathfinder. I've been with the company for a long time, but I do a lot of fiction work as well. And so I've written a couple of Pathfinder novels, Death's Heretic and The Redemption Engine, which are both in the store if you're interested. I've done, written a bunch of creator-owned short stories in various places, including the biggest one was an anthology called Machine of Death, which actually hit number one on Amazon a few years ago. And I also, for this special thing, I don't necessarily mention it that much anymore, but a long time ago I did an anthology called Before They Were Giants that was full of, I got a bunch of big time science fiction fantasy authors, had them give me the first story they ever published, and then a new interview where they were critiquing their own stories and essentially saying what they know now that they wish they'd known then. And so that was my sneaky way to get a bunch of famous authors to tell me all their secrets. So I brought a stack of those, and I'm going to be giving them away at the end of the panel. So you guys are welcome to them. We'll see how many people want them. There might be some sort of rumble. I'll figure out how to decide that. So I do a lot of different stuff, fiction, comics.
I'm Christopher Paul Carey. I am senior editor at Paizo. I've worked at the company since 2008. I pretty much work on all the lines except for the adventure card game. I've also done a lot of fiction work at Paizo and elsewhere. At Paizo, I've worked with Pathfinder Tales. I edited the web fiction, edited the Pathfinder's journals and the Pathfinder Adventure Path, and more recently have done developmental editing on the Pathfinder Tales novel line. I've also edited a series of collections and anthologies for other publishers. I'm also an author. I'm best known for co-writing a book with Hugo Award-winning science fiction author Philip Jose Farmer. This book here. And then I kind of went on and continued his series, his Ancient Opar Tokarsa series. So,
well, can you show the first book?
This one here?
Yeah, I can get it there.
The Song of Kwasin. It's actually the third book in his Farmer's Ancient Opar series.
Well, and can you talk about your new project, or maybe not publicly?
No, I can't.
Okay, and he's also got an exciting new project that he can't talk about. So, all right. So, as we've said sort of every year on this panel, like, we could go on at length about all sorts of stuff, but the real truth is we're here to answer whatever questions you guys have about fiction, both in terms of, writing is good. Like, the advice on how to make my writing better is great, but there's a lot of that out there, and I feel like what's always missing and what I always wanted when I was, studying creative writing in school was, somebody please tell me about the business of this. How do I get published? What does an agent do? What does remaindering mean? All of these different aspects. So we're really here to answer whatever questions you have about the business of writing. And if folks don't have any, we'll just start asking each other questions and spouting off. Yeah. But why'd you come? What do you want to know? Yeah, right there.
We're a little bit on the opposite end of the spectrum. We're blessed with having a guy with a degree in creative writing and things like that, who also happens to be our project manager, production manager. So he has, no time to write. We can only work people 12 hours a day, we discovered. But seriously, he works super hard. So we're actually looking to hire, and he would manage and kind of do some ghostwriting. So we're looking for some, you know, like, what is a good pay? I mean, you know, we're not looking to slave labor people. But
for science fiction and fantasy?
Yeah.
Are you talking short fiction, novels, or do you...
Both.
Actually. Both, okay.
And just so you guys know, if you want an in with some game publishers, they may not know that we had to pay money to learn these things from a lawyer. But when we go to trademark our products, we can trademark them for the game. But we also need to trademark them for novel and short story. We don't trademark them for novel and short story. Like our cornerstone product is Cthulhu Wars. Somebody came out with a novel called Cthulhu Wars. Now, luckily we had covered our butts and it filed so we could go back to them and say, you have to change the title of your book. However, had we not done that, then we would be out of luck. And so when you go to Amazon currently, you'll see Cthulhu Wars, the book, as well as Cthulhu Wars, our game, and we'd rather just be our products, right?
Sure.
So that's one of the things as publishers, if we're trademarking their product, you guys can actually come in, if you're a writer, and say, by the way, I can cover this and this for you, if you want to hire me to write a novel for you.
Sure.
So yeah, what's the reasonable pay in the world?
So one ugly truth about the publishing industry is kind of like, there aren't a lot of standards. Like, pay is whatever you can command. I mean, it's art, right? Like, when somebody paints a picture, is that picture worth $100 or $1,000? It depends who you ask, and sometimes the same thing can get wildly different rates. That said, when you're thinking about what you're going to pay, oftentimes, the less control you have over a project, the more rights you're assigning over for that project, you know, the more money you should get, right? Like, if something is yours and you own all rights and you're just selling first rights to a short story to a fiction magazine like Lightspeed or Apex or something, like, maybe you're getting, you know, 6 cents a word is currently the pro rate for CIFWA, the Science Fiction Writers Association of America, and that's a perfectly decent rate. That said, if you're doing, you know, game tie-in writing where you're generally assigning everything over, where you don't own any of it. Like, even me, like, when I write for Pathfinder, like, I don't own Death's Heretic, like, my first novel for Paizo. I wrote it for them in the same way that a carpenter builds your house. Like, he doesn't get to come back later and be like, hey, that's still mine. It's like, no, you've sold all rights.
Yeah, well, that's my bedroom.
Yeah, exactly.
For 2 weeks.
Exactly.
So there's no royalties or anything?
Sometimes there are. I mean, like, Pathfinder pays royalties. Some tie-in people don't. Some people pay only royalties, right? Like, every deal is going to be different. In general, if you're not getting an advance, you should get a lot of royalties. If you're getting a lot of royalties, you probably won't get a big advance. And that's how a lot of smaller publishers sort of cover their butts, is if they're not sure how well a thing will sell, they'll say, hey, we'll split the money with you 50-50, you know, after costs, with the assumption that maybe there isn't a lot of money, right? Whereas when you go with somebody bigger, they can usually assume that they're going to sell some copies, and then they can give you an advance. In general, get paid, right? Like, you should demand to get some money up front. Otherwise, why are you working for them and not just publishing it yourself? I'm kind of rambling.
You know, the pay is going to vary with the size of the publisher and their audience, and also, you know, if you're agented, and we'll probably get into talking about agents, you're going to get more money. They've done a lot of people have done surveys on that, and you get several thousand dollars more usually when you're agented for a novel.
We should say the average first advance for or the average advance for your first science fiction novel, like, at a reputable house, like, you've sold your first book, you're in the big time now. The average amount of money you're going to get from that is a $5,000 advance, and then a royalty, you know, 4%, 8%, something.
Yeah, that kicks in later.
Yeah, that kicks in after you earn out, which means you get, let's say you have a $5,000 royalty, a $5,000 advance and an 8% royalty, which actually is what, for a long time, the Pathfinder novels were, because that's a very respectable amount. You get that $5,000 up front when you turn in the book, and then that 8%, like, every book that sells, you get 8% of that, and that total slowly rises, and once that meets $5,000, then you're considered to have earned out your advance, and at that point you start getting more money. But the advance is like a loan against future earnings, except that you don't have to pay it back. Back in the olden days, you did have to pay it back if your book didn't earn out, and that was real bad for authors. So yeah, it's not that way anymore.
Especially if they had giant advances and it was a bomb.
Destroy you. So $5,000 is the average advance for a first novel, a big time one. If you have an agent, the average advance is $10,000 for your first novel. So you can see that an agent really can make a big difference. You will also note that $5,000, if you're like, it took me a year to write this novel, and I got $5,000, you're not making a lot. It's like it's really hard to make a living as a novelist. Even once you start making, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a book, well, $20,000 a book, if it takes you all year to write it, still means you make $20,000 a year. Yeah. So, word of caution.
Yeah, and there are people who just crank them out, especially I know a lot of romance authors who do that, who just crank out, 6, 7, 8 books a year.
Yeah.
But that's all they're doing,
And I should also point out that, there's various, CIFWA, who's the main sort of writer's organization for genre stuff, they break things down into sort of like pro, semi-pro, fanzine kind of things. So don't feel like, 5 cents a word, if that's a metric for like, oh, that's a good pro rate, don't expect to get that right off the bat, and don't feel bad if you're not. There are plenty of, when I was first starting out, there were plenty of places I wrote for that were paying 1 cent a word, 2 cents a word, and that's fine. Yeah. It's just, my advice is always make sure you're sort of shooting for the top, and then, get what you can, right?
Yeah.
But if you're making 2 cents for a while, and then you get a lot of stuff published, well, maybe now you can demand 4 cents or 5 cents, and you just sort of climb your way up.
Yeah, and there's less stigma in the short fiction market, I think, when it comes to, you're taking a lesser pay for a story to get it out there. Obviously, like you said, you want to shoot for as high as you can get, so you start at the top, get rejected all the way down to the level that you,
And it changes by what type of writing you're doing, right? For instance, we're talking fiction, where we're like, oh yeah, 5 cents a word is fine. For gaming stuff, like Pathfinder starts all our authors, if you're writing for a campaign setting book or something, we start everybody at 7 cents a word. And we're, one of the best in the industry at that point. But that's sort of the floor. And then, it's the sort of thing where, so that's tabletop gaming. If you're writing for video games, you can command a ton of money because video games they work on a totally different scale. Same with Hollywood, right? I've talked to people who write scripts and stuff, and selling a script is incredibly, incredibly hard. But then if you do, maybe you get $100,000 for it. Well, that makes it all worth it, potentially, right? So the answer is really just get whatever you can. But if you're trying to start something up and you want to attract pro-level people, 5 to 10 cents a word is where you're kind of going to need to start if you want respectable folks who have experience.
Yeah, we can just, again, from being on the other side, the business side of
Do you want to introduce your company?
I'm sorry. I'm Ian Starcher. I'm one of the owners of Peterson Games. I handle all the business development. So my partner is Sandy Peterson. He actually is the guy who created Call of Cthulhu and brought Cthulhu Mythos to gaming back in 1981. So he's been the designer. He designed Doom and a couple other obscure titles like that and videos too. But so he's like 35 year veteran in game design, and then I handle all the crap that isn't that cool.
Sure.
So somebody's got to, right? I love what I do, really. But one of the things is, as a publisher, speaking as a publisher of games, we're coming out with an RPG product, but we do board games. Is one, we don't chintz people now, and I think smaller publishers, we're no bigger than anybody else, certainly not as big as Paizo, of course, but a good publisher recognizes if you pay people, they will be loyal, and frankly, your product will become the priority, and then they'll want to work for you. So, we actually cheated on trying to figure this out for example, our artists, because we said, well, what's Paizo pay? Okay, great, we'll steal Paizo,
sure,
freelancer, and pay him what Paizo pays him, and you know,
that's a great way to do it.
You know, and our constant email to him is, we hope to work you to death as much as we possibly can. You're working crazy hours. So, and he's like, yeah, bring it on. So, because he's great. But what makes him great is he's on time. He produces what he says he's going to produce, and it looks, you know, it's competent quality work, and it's what we need. We're not asking him to make, you know, Mona Lisa, not a monster. But anyway, so just from that standpoint, you know, and you guys do pay, you know, more than others, and that's, there's nothing.
And it helps. It gets you. It gets you top.
Yeah,
talent,
like 7 cents a word, for example, is more than what I've heard in the marketplace. But
sure, right. Well, and it's, you know, you raise a good point about when you're trying to get into writing for a living. Like, you know, if what you want to do is just write entirely creator-owned stuff, submit it, and see what happens, that's one route to do it. But if you want to be working for anybody else, you know, whether you want to write for games, whether you want to write tie-in novels, you know, for Star Wars or whoever, like whether you want to write video games, a lot of what you can do has nothing to do with your writing itself. It's about being professional, right? You know, being hitting your deadlines, being on whatever the brief is that they gave you. One of my first writing jobs ever, when I was working for a newspaper, the editor brought me in and he was like, James, you're one of my best writers. I love working with you. You're great. This article is awesome. And I was like, thank you. What did you like about it? And he was like, it was on time, it was on word count, you know, it was like, and I was like,
yes,
well, what about the writing? And he was like, oh, I mean, that was good too. You know, like, but really, professionalism will get you so far in this business.
This is why Neil Gaiman says you need to be good, you need to be fast, you need to be nice, and you don't even need to be all three.
Sure,
but
the honest truth is you have to be all three.
Twice.
Yeah, that's the thing, is because there are, you don't have to be, but it helps. And right now, like, especially if you're just starting out and you don't have a name for yourself, you need every possible advantage, because there's a million people competing for the slot that you're going for.
Yeah, we assume the writing, or the art, in our case, because we've been hiring artists, not writers yet, we're just getting into that, but we assume the work's going to be good. I mean, that's like the entry level. You know, an artist, or DeviantArt, might see whatever they've done, and we go, okay, they can do it. Now it's all price negotiations, and are you a competent professional?
Yeah.
And you get hired twice if you are a competent professional. If you're an artist and you didn't get it on time, that screws me. That cost me way more money than, you know, $25 or whatever extra it costs to hire you.
Sure. So let's get some more questions. Yeah, right there.
So at what point in the writing process, like how many drafts or whatever, at what point should you start trying to get it published? If you're writing a book or something?
I would say, sorry, do you want to take this first? I keep talking.
You know, if you're too close to it, obviously, you can't tell, right? You won't know whether it's ready or not. So I would get some trusted first readers who you respect their opinion and who are knowledgeable at it. Like, you know, you might give it to, you know, a relative or something like that, but it's hard to get an objective opinion from someone who's close to you. So it's better to find someone who actually knows, who's at least a step above where you are as a writer.
Or even at your level in a writer's group.
Or your level in a writer's group. So, but to get a series of opinions, you know, like, I have mixed feelings about writer's groups. I think they're super valuable at a certain point in your career. And they can also be very helpful continuing if you get the right group of people. Continuing on in your career, but they're very valuable initially, because they get you to look at your writing objectively, and they allow you to gain a certain discernment, or you know, ability to discern who's giving you good feedback, and that ultimately gives you confidence in your own writing. Because, like, if you start recognizing that, and realizing, like, sometimes the person who's critiquing your work will hurt your feelings because they've criticized one of your precious ideas or something like that. But if you can come to the point where you recognize that that they're correct about that, and then it helps you grow as a writer. You start gaining confidence in your ability to discern what's right for your own writing. And then you start understanding, it's like, oh, I do think this draft is worthy of going to the next step and to start submitting it to publishers or an agent. So
I'm definitely a fan of the idea of, like, finish a draft, put it in a drawer, walk away from it for a week, go write something else, come back, and then read it again. And, you know, if you see problems in it that you're like, I know that's not great, but maybe it'll be fine. Like, no, if you recognize the problem, you got to go back and fix it. But when you get to the point where you read something and you're like, I legitimately don't know how to make this better, send it out. You know, I think there are two quotes that I always think about. One of them is, I think, Ray Bradbury, who said, quantity begets quality. The more stuff you send out there, the more stuff you put out into the world, the more likely it is you're going to have something that hits, right? And then the other one was actually, very early on, I read a thing from Orson Scott Card, who I've got opinions about Orson Scott Card, but this was a great quote, which was, send out today the best work you're capable of doing today. In a year, you'll be better, and you'll be able to do better on that piece. But in a year, you should be writing what you're excited about in a year, not reworking this year's piece. So I think you need to just send your stuff out there, and you're going to get rejected. Like, the subtitle of this entire panel is, you will be rejected 1 million times. Like, it's going to happen constantly. And it should happen to you throughout your career, because if you ever stop getting rejected regularly, it means you're not shooting high enough. I get rejected all the time. So I think you just need to put your stuff out there and then write more. And when you get a bunch of, if you get comments back from editors, if they say, oh, I liked this, except that this was broken or whatever, take that feedback, see if you agree with it. Like, that's really valuable. But ultimately, you just need to put your stuff out there. More questions.
How long should it take to write a short story? That's a really weird question. But if somebody has a full-time job, and you're like, you were coming, it took you a year to write a novel. I assume you weren't working 40, 50 hours a week on that novel.
No, of course not. It was, and most people have day jobs, right? Like, most
5,000 in advance a year, yeah, I could see that would be a...
Exactly. I mean, in terms of how long, like, as a publisher, how long you should give somebody, my strategy has always been to ask them to either say, here's the deadline that I need it by, can you do it by then? Or the flip side is say, like, hey, how long, you know your process, you tell me what a reasonable amount of time you think it'll be for you to produce this story, and then hold them to it. But you shouldn't feel like, if you're a writer who can write a book in, 2 weeks, that's awesome. Other writers take a year or 2 years. Both of those are valid, right? Because some people, first draft and it's done. Like, I always used to hate, I know China Mieville would do the same. It's kind of like almost Mike Moorcock did the same thing, where, like, he'd think about a book for a really long time, and then he would sit down and in like 2 weeks would write a novel. And it's like, oh my God, that sounds way better than my way of doing it.
It's the Brandon Sanderson method.
Sure, right? Like, he's just really, really fast. But, everybody works differently. Some people really got to chip away at it.
Yeah.
Like George R.R. Martin.
Sure, right?
I personally find short stories take longer, like, proportionally to write than novels do. Not, as far as the time invested in the word count. I remember taking, I think I took a good half a year once to write a short, well, it turned out to be a novelette, but... and because I wanted to really get it right, but I've also, been under deadline and written a short story in a weekend, so.
Yeah. And sometimes that's great, right?
Yeah, like,
I love deadline pressure sometimes.
Yeah, I've had very good experience with deadline pressure and, like, actually turning out quality work, because it jogs something in you. And
I want to throw out one more catchphrase early on here that... I say a lot, but it's really been my motto for my entire career, is that working in the field of writing, you really need a balance of hubris and humility. You have to have both, because you need to be humble enough to take when somebody when somebody gives you criticism or tells you something, like, you need to be able to take that in, look at that, and really sort of say, like, oh, okay, are they right? What am I doing here? Like, is this good? And also just to not be an arrogant jerk, right? But you also need to have the hubris. You need to have the arrogance to believe that your stories are worth people reading and that you have just as much a right to be a published writer as anybody else, right? Because you're going to get, like I said, you're going to get rejected constantly, and it's really easy. I see so many authors, they get a couple of rejection letters, and they're like, well, guess I'm no good. Yep. I'm done. And it's like, no, you gotta believe in yourself, because everybody gets those rejection letters, and the ones who stick with it are the ones who have careers. Talent is like 5%, and 95% is, did you keep doing it, and did you keep trying to learn while you were doing it? That's really the whole recipe. More questions? Yeah.
Do you have any advice for working under a pen name, especially now that more and more publishers are pushing promotional stuff onto the author? If you have, like, day job reasons for not writing under your own name, how do you make it? Do you make two Twitter accounts? How does it work?
Sure, yeah. You can work it however you want. We definitely, I've got a lot of friends who use pen names. You know, Leanne Mercier actually writes the Pathfinder novels. She uses a pen name because she's a hardcore attorney in her day job and, like, doesn't want to mix things up. But it was funny because she had written for us for years, and then, like last year when we were doing an audiobook, the narrator was like, how do you pronounce, you know, Leanne Mercier? And so I emailed Leanne and said, how do you want it pronounced? She wrote back and said, you know, I've been writing under this name for, like, 6 years. I've never actually, like, decided, so you just pick whatever you want, and that's how I pronounce it. But I do think in terms of promotion, I think you need to build a brand under whatever name you want to write under. And you can have it be an open secret if you want, right? Like, James S.A. Corey is a great example, who writes the Expanse series. You know, it's an open secret that he's actually two dudes, Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. But, you know, you have to dig at least a little bit to get it. So I'd say build a brand under the name that you want. Maintain that Twitter account. Push your efforts there, because it's hard enough to build one name, let alone build several.
Yeah. Back in the day, when I started working for Paizo, I decided my editor name was going to be Christopher Carey. So I'm credited in all Paizo products. Mm-hmm. I wanted to divide my editing person, my, you know, RPG industry personality from my author personality. So somehow Christopher Paul Carey got on here.
I think at some point you realized that working at Paizo was actually maybe good for the novel career too.
Yeah. So, you know, and I've also written Pathfinder Tales fiction too, and a comic script. So, you know, they're starting to mix.
Yeah.
But that was the initial idea. Because I wasn't sure at the time how that, like, working in the RPG industry would be seen if I wanted to be a novelist and be published by, like, Tor or something like that. So, because there has been, historically, and less so now, I think, there used to be some stigma associated with writing
tie-in fiction.
And, like, Locus magazine magazine for science fiction and fantasy didn't used to even cover gaming fiction. They have changed in the past few years.
Yeah, there's no stigma anymore, because it turns out there's a whole lot of New York Times bestsellers, you know, that are in tie-in fiction. Like, it's hard for anybody to look down their nose when it's like
when this Halo novel sold.
Yeah, like, exactly. When you've got all
3 million copies,
and you've got famous authors writing stuff. More questions. I know you must have them, otherwise. Yeah, that's great.
I'm currently writing young adult fiction. And, you know, sometimes it's hard, you know, writing young adult, it's like, it's hard to balance, like, you know, the current trends of dystopia and, like, what you actually want to write.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, everybody's, like, dystopia, everybody dies. Like, I just want to write something more positive.
Then you should. Like, don't, and this is a big one, don't chase trends. Because the other thing about chasing trends is, by the time you see a book a trend rising in the bookstores, it's already over. You've already missed the boat, because even, like, the publishing timescale is so long that even if you could be like, oh, zombies are hot right now, I'm going to write a zombie book, okay, you spend 6 months writing that book, you spend 6 months trying to get an agent, 6 months trying to sell it, and then it takes a year from when you sell it to when it comes out, or two, you're now like several years after that trend crested. So really the answer is write the stuff you want to see, and if it's not what's in the bookstores right now, that's a huge advantage, because people are going to be looking for what's different, what's new, what sets your stuff apart. So yeah, don't worry about not writing what you think people want. This is it. Let's jump right over
there. So I've been writing, I guess, the magnum opus since high school. And I'm just trying to figure out any tips for staying on track with that while doing other writing.
So, I mean, we spoke yesterday, but I think it's easy to get bogged down in something that you've been writing for a long, long time, and that's something that that I've had some experience with. And like even when I was younger, I had this whole world that I built, and like I always wanted to do something with it, but it just got to be too complicated, and like I just got a hang up about it, and just couldn't ever get what I wanted to get out of it, you know, and write something like a concise novel or something like that. So that's the danger of writing something, especially if you began it when you were younger, and like you're continuing to write it, you're so wrapped up in it that you can't see it objectively and see the project objectively. I don't know if that's addressing your question. Are you talking about writing in addition to
to I guess the big sort of thing? Having a giant background project and then also some projects that sort of pay the bills and get writing credits?
I would say don't overvalue staying focused, right? Because, you know, you say magnum opus, but the odds of your first book being your best book, God, I hope it's not, because that means that you'd never improve as a writer, right? Like, I think that you need to see each book as the book you're writing right now, and acknowledge that future work is probably going to be better, right? And so don't obsess about getting a thing perfect. Just try to do as well as you can and then get it out there. Because, like, it's very easy to just keep polishing the same thing again and again. And it's ultimately not very helpful in my experience. Right. Like,
You know, it might be that you set a time limit for yourself for the other stuff and say, like, for the next year, I'm going to write all this freelance writing in the gaming industry or whatever and get some actual credits to my name. And that will build your confidence a lot. And then you can reevaluate. It's like, do I want to continue writing, you know, articles for source books and things like that, if you're talking game writing, or does that not quite satisfy, you know, the itch that I have to write something, you know, an original fantasy novel, or, you know, and then you can make that decision then, and then you've at least had the experience, like, I have taken this period of time and I have accomplished this goal. I have four or five articles published now under my name. And then you can be like, okay, I've done that now. Now I know actually how to accomplish something and get it done. Now I will set another time period. It might be a year or a year and a half, and I'm going to get my damn novel finished in that period and done with in a professional manner. And if I don't, I'm going to swear to myself I'm abandoning that project, and then I'm going to move on to the next thing. You know, you might, like, I've had to play tricks like that with myself before, so... It tends to work.
Well, and sometimes, you know, like, there are a million books you could write, right? And so, like, I was talking to Brandon Sanderson at one point, and he was telling me that his big Stormlight archive, anybody read that?
Yeah.
Way of Kings? It's amazing. But it's huge. The scope of it is massive. Like, the paperbacks practically don't stay bound together. And that's something that he's been working on since he was a little kid, but he felt like he had to go write, you know, 20 other novels before you could really tackle something of that scope, right? So don't be afraid to start small, start with something you're not as emotionally invested in, so that you can play around and tear it apart and learn the ropes.
Can you say the name of that one again?
Way of Kings is the first book in Sanderson's Stormlight archive.
I think it's his best one. Is coming soon.
Yeah, exactly, right? But they're huge. Yeah.
Okay, so this might be a little bit off topic, but not really.
Go for it.
How do you... if you have a whole bunch of different ideas for different stories and things like that, and you're working on them all at the same time, how do you finish one before you're, like, 40?
Another... I really like catchphrases, but, you know, Neil Gaiman has got his whole thing about finish things, and I think it's really true. Like, it doesn't matter. No book is good or bad until it is first done. So I would say just don't let yourself get distracted. When you're working on a thing, just say, no, I can't start a new story until I finish this one, unless I'm truly going to abandon it, right? Because you need to get in there. And oftentimes, jumping from story to story is a way to avoid doing the hard work that you know the story needs, right? When you're like, oh, this is really good. Oh, I hit a point where now plotting is hard, so I'll go start something else. And it's like, if you always do that, you never actually get, you never hone those skills of finishing things.
To be successful, like, one, this is a conversation I had with Eric Mona at one point, yeah. But, and I think you may have heard him say this before, yeah, too, but you have to be kind of OCD, really, and very focused on, like, the thing that you're doing and be like, I am going to get this done, and this is what I'm concentrating, putting all of my concentration into, yeah, all of my attention into, and I have a goal with it, and I have my own self-imposed deadline with it, and I'm just going to get it done. And those are the types of writers that are successful, who actually are come to some kind of self-discipline and can go, you know, get one project done, and then while they're finishing that, usually toward the end of if I'm writing a novel, I'm already starting to think about the next one that I'm going to go into. And I take a short break, because otherwise you'll go insane, and then I go back into it more refreshed, you know.
I oftentimes hear advice from old writers that just say, oh, well, you know, a real writer just can't not write. They can't help themselves. They're always going to write. I think that is utter bullshit. And I'm going on record, because all the professional writers that I know, you know, if somebody says, oh, I can't not write, they're like, oh man, I can't. I would be happy to do literally anything other than writing right now. Because writing is hard. Like, writing is way harder than playing a video game or going to the beach with your friends or whatever. And you have to cut some of that stuff out in order to make time to write. Like, writing professionally is like going to the gym. You're excited about the result. Like, I often say, like, I don't like writing nearly as much as I like having written.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's very important to recognize that, like, it's gonna suck, and you can't wait for the muse. And like, there's sometimes where you're just gonna sit there and, like Spider Robinson said, you just stare at a screen until blood comes out of your forehead, and that's how a book happens. And you need to be prepared for that, because if you expect it all to be easy, then you'll either get distracted or you'll feel bad when it doesn't come easily. And the answer is, there are moments of transcendence when you're just flying. But you got to get there by slogging through all the other times.
And once you start working, like, you write one project and move on to the next and move on to the next, you start seeing patterns in how you deal with projects. Like, I always, for some reason, in between the quarter, like, if I'm writing a novel, the quarter mark and the halfway mark is, like, the worst for me. Like, I just hate what I'm writing, and I want to abandon it, and I'm like, this is the wrong novel for me to write or whatever. But I recognize now that everything happens almost every single time, and I force myself through that, because I know that if I hit right when I hit the 50% mark, it becomes a lot easier, and then it's like, oh, okay, I've gotten over this hump, and it's then like the last half is like, I write it really fast and it's really good. So,
So I want to talk just for a minute before we take more questions about different types of publishing, different ways you can publish. So there's traditional publishing. Which is, you know, you go to a big house, whether that's Tor, which is part of Macmillan, or Simon & Schuster, whoever. And they don't have to be big. There are also plenty of, like, mid-level presses, you know, folks like Subterranean, who does really amazing high-quality limited edition stuff, or Angry Robot, or whoever. So that's sort of traditional publishing, and you can do that either with or without an agent. Those are sort of your options there. There's also, game tie-in writing, or tie-in writing in general, which is somebody hires you to write something specifically, whether it's for us or Halo or anybody in between. And then the last is self-publishing. And I think I'm just going to go straight out and say, I think that self-publishing is not a great route if you're in the audience here. And I'll tell you why. Is because self-publishing means that instead of being a writer, you are being a publisher, which means that instead of writing, your time is being spent on marketing, it's being spent on producing the books, it's being spent trying to gain an audience. And if you don't already have an audience, there's 10 million, self-published authors screaming into the void on Amazon Publishing. It's really hard for anybody to stumble across your work. So if you self-publish before you have an audience, you're going to be hand-selling every copy of that book, and you're essentially like the literary equivalent of a busker. A lot of my friends are buskers, and they love it. But if you don't want to constantly be doing that hustle, go with a publisher, because a publisher can do all of that work for you, possibly better than you could do on your own, and let you just write the book. So I think that's self-publishing is really a tempting route because it involves a lot less rejection. It involves a lot less. I mean, it's very immediately gratifying to be like, I finished this book. I put it online. It's published. Hooray. But that same book that you're now selling to 20 people, maybe if you had gone through the long, hard process of trying to sell that to an agent, to a major house, maybe that same book could have been read by 20,000 people. It's just, it's a lot harder. So it's a delayed gratification thing. You're going to let me take the fire for that? Soon the door will open and all the angry self-publishers will drag me out and shake hands.
It's it is the rare author who has the whole skill set to do it all.
Yeah.
I think it's what you're saying. And you also have to invest a lot of money if you don't have the skill set.
Right.
If you're not an editor, and I don't know a single author... Or I don't know a single editor who can edit herself,
Oh, yeah, we can't.
And yeah.
Not well.
So so you have to have a skill set, and you have to have some money that you're going to invest in it, because you're going to want somebody else to go through, and at the very least, if you're like a super clean writer, at least proofread it. But you really should have an experienced editor go through your work, looking at the story and the characterization and all the different complex components that make up a novel, and so it's just really hard. Of course, it also depends on. I will defend self-publishing, and it depends on what your goals are. If you're okay with having a smaller audience, that might just be composed of your friends and family, and the people that you happen to hand sell it to. That can be okay, because maybe you're not writing to be the next George R. R. Martin,
But sell yourself short.
But don't sell yourself short if you want more than that, certainly, So.
Let's also talk really briefly about agents.
Did you?
About agents, so I'll segue along
there. Yeah.
I've been told by people pretty much you need an agent, and if you don't have an agent, the publisher will pretty much just put it on a slush pile, or it won't even read it.
Basically. I mean, it depends on the publisher. But...
Yeah, it also depends if you've actually made contact with the editor and have a connection with them, and whether it's meeting them at a convention or wherever.
Yeah.
Because they might have, you might have pitched your idea to them, and they were genuinely interested and want to read it.
Yeah.
And then you're not in the slush pile.
Yeah, but editors do have slush piles. Even the small presses have massive slush piles, so it's very easy to get lost in there.
We had a slush pile.
We did, and it was terrible trying to get through it because we were always so overworked.
Yes.
So an agent can really get you past that. An agent can also negotiate stuff for you much better than you can yourself. They can use their network of relationships and whatnot. So I certainly think that an agent is very useful. there are some types of work where maybe you don't need as much. Like, certainly if you want to do, like, game writing for Paizo or something, you don't need an agent because our deals are all standardized. So you're making the same rate whether you have an agent or not. You're just giving the agent a cut. But in general, I'm a big fan of them. I think that they can provide both useful feedback on your work. They can match you up with the right markets. They can get you the better deal. But a bad agent is worse than no agent. So it's really important when you're looking around, like, if an agent approaches you or shows interest, or certainly before you approach an agent, see who they represent. Do they represent people you respect? Like, send an email to some of the people they list on their clients list and see what they have to say. Like, you know, if an author says, oh, I love my agent, they're great, then cool. But sometimes they'll say, actually, I've been really disappointed with their performance. Or they'll say, I'm not their client at all. Why were they listing me on their website? Yep. Right? Like, Like, these are things that it's important to, you know, just vet anybody the same you would any sort of job applicant. And with all of this, remember that money in publishing should always flow toward the author. You should never have to pay, as an author, anybody for anything. Like, it should always be people, anybody you work with should be getting paid based on a cut of what you're getting paid. Like, they eat what they kill. That said, if you go the self-publishing route, suddenly you have to pay all the professionals, which is another reason to maybe not do that.
Yeah, so I don't have an agent currently. My next project I'm probably going to get an agent for because I want it to go further than my prior work. And I did have an agent for this book when it was originally published. And my agent was Philip, as a farmer's agent who was a big-time New York agent. And I know for a fact he got a lot more money for the book for me and for Phil than the publisher was originally asking. So he had the clout to push for more money, and he got it, you know. The other good thing is, like, you know, a couple years ago I get an email from the agent, the same agent, who's not my agent, but it was the agent for this particular project, and he's like, hey, I'd like to sell the French rights to this book, you know. And I'm like, okay, you know, and, you know, he sent me the contract, and the terms were acceptable, and I didn't have to do anything, and I'm continuing to make free money on that, you know, and I also a new country to get an audience in. You know, and I didn't have to do anything, and I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own.
Yeah,
you know? People
don't realize that foreign rights are actually where fiction authors make most of their money. Foreign rights and the occasional film option, because of the way the deals are structured, you actually get a much bigger cut of the money when your book is resold in another country, rather than when you sell to the original publisher in North America. It's getting down into the nitty-gritties, and probably won't need that information right away, but it's a good reason to have an agent, because then when you can hit all over the world, not just in your little spot.
Particularly Germany, a lot of Germany is sort of the clearinghouse for a lot of the other nations. They you know, if something works in Germany, then Norwegians get the vote.
My friend Dan Wells is huge in Germany, and that's really been his career, to the point where he moved there for a while. But I want to pause just for a minute and give away some books. So I'm curious, I don't know how best to do this. Raise your hand and name a favorite character or a character you like from Pathfinder fiction. Anybody? Okay, right there. Or even describe them.
Wait. Oh, Steela's cool. Yeah.
Okay. I'll count it. Who goes?
Thank you.
All right. Green.
That talking sword.
Prim. All right. Go back there. I'm not going to throw that far, but let's go back there.
Kimler.
Which one?
Kimler.
Ailsa Kindler. Yeah. Wes's rad old lady adventurer. Yeah. Go for it. Here. Hook. All right. Let's go back there.
Radovan and Count Jagger.
Sounds good. This is going to totally injure people. Yeah.
Pirate's Honor, the Naga.
Yeah. Celeste. Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, that's her name. All right. Terrible memory. Sorry.
I'm a huge fan of old Mage Jatembe and his 10 Magic Warriors.
Yeah. All right, last one. Anybody? Yeah, go for it.
Leori from Curse of the Crimson Throne.
All right. Cool. And I'd be happy to sign these for you guys, but hopefully there's some really good advice in here. I clearly thought there was. So we got time for a couple more questions. We'll try to go lightning round. Yeah.
How are these processes different if you're under the age of 18?
Probably if you need to sign any sort of legal contracts, you might have to get somebody with power of attorney for you, like a legal guardian or whatever. Otherwise, I don't think anybody cares.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, James Jacobs sold his first adventure to Dungeon when he was like 13 or something. So it can absolutely be done.
And there are youth publishing options where like they're specifically looking for people.
Sure.
So it might be a good way to get in the door.
Yeah, it's a good marketing thing sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah. And you talked earlier about like the very process of like sitting down and writing like going to gym or something. Just real quickly, what's y'all's like time frame to make yourself sit down?
What's the process? Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. My personal writing discipline, you mean?
Yeah.
I tend to write on weekends. I tend to write on Sundays, and I devote the entire day to it. Sometimes the entire day and just entire night to it, because that's when I can carve out time. And I set myself a word count goal, whether it's like 2,000 words, and that just builds up. If you're just writing 2,000 words a week, you can have a novel in less than a year. You know, so that's how I do it, and I just hold myself to it. Yeah,
and for me, I find the mornings work best for me, because I feel like, even though I'm not necessarily a morning person, like, Pathfinder is a very, Paizo is a very creative job, so by the end of the day, all my creativity's kind of been wrung out of me. So by getting up early and writing before work just for an hour, I can kind of give a bunch of that creativity to myself and then give Paizo all the rest, because they'll just take it all.
Yeah. That's kind of why I write on Sundays, because I've had like a day in between work and I'm starting to feel refreshed again. So.
But I also play tricks on myself. I'm a big fan of what I call procrastinativity, which is being productive via procrastination. So I'll give myself two things and I'll be like, all right, I'm writing this morning. What if I don't write, I have to go to the gym. Or if I don't go to the gym, I have to write. And so when I'm doing one of them and I'm like, oh, I hate this, then I can go do the other thing and feel like I'm getting away with something, even though it's the thing that I like didn't want to do the day before. Yeah. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up then. Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it. And we'll be around all show if you want to come out.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.